are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Professor of Law, Harvard University, Lawrence Tribe will be joining us to discuss emoluments, immigration, Gorsuch, and maybe the coming constitutional crisis. Also on the program today, Trump picks Judge Gorsuch, far right winger, to be his SCOTUS nominee. Will Democrats follow the McConnell rule and simply refuse to allow a vote? Also on the program today, Republicans change committee rules, pass Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary nominee, and Tom Price, Health and Human Services nominee, through committee. Jeff Sessions passed through committee today, all on party line votes. Betsy DeVos passed through committee yesterday on party line votes. Still a question about her floor vote, however, because it appears she cheated, plagiarized in her questions for the committee. Just a reminder, she's the nominee for the education secretary. Meanwhile, the Republican Muslim ban kills, and according to most Americans, hasn't made us any safer. San Francisco sues Trump over his sanctuary city's executive orders. And remember Donald Trump's negotiate with pharma over drug prices promise? Psych. You can forget it. He caved.
Turns out it would actually be really bad. Not good.
Your protests work not only on Chuck Schumer, but Harley Davidson canceled their invite to Donald Trump to visit their factory. The Army Corps of Engineers is ordered to issue the Dakota Access Pipeline permit, and CNN no longer obligated to have liars on their air.
Made the decision for them.
There you go. All this and more on today's program. I also pre-recorded this morning an interview with Ian Millhiser on Gorsuch. We may run that this afternoon after we speak to Professor Tribe. We may run it tomorrow. Gorsuch isn't going anywhere. And, you know, I made this point with Ian, and I will make it again. As far as I'm concerned, short of nominating Pam Carlin, and that's just, she's my favorite law professor who may have been a potential pick at one day, at one time or another. I don't think the Democrats should even contemplate. I don't even think they need to argue about Gorsuch's extreme corporate vision of the world. I think they simply need to follow the McConnell rule, which is, the opposition party does not participate in the nominations of nominees. Neil Gorsuch, when he is put on the Supreme Court, because he will be, because even if the Democrats filibuster, Mitch McConnell will nuke the filibuster and then they'll vote for him, will always have an asterisk next to his name. In fact, I think he should be called probably Justice Asterisk. Because that seat was meant for a Democratic president to fill. Period. End of story. Nobody denies that. And Ian spoke quite well as to the implications of that. And I could even quote from Gorsuch a piece he wrote in 2005 as a lawyer. You politicize these things and it begins to undercut the legitimacy of the institution of the Supreme Court. And if he, I was going to say if he had any integrity, they would have said, no, I'm not accepting that.
Yeah, let's don't get carried away.
I'm not going to get carried away with that. And I will say, last night, I was at a protest in Grand Army Plaza, and there was anywhere from, I mean, I had to leave after about 45 minutes because Saul was getting a little cold. But when I left, there was at least 1,500 to 2,000 people there, I think. And supposedly, it was continuing to grow. It was around the corner from Schumer's house. And I will tell you, Schumer's opinion about whether or not he should, they should filibuster sight unseen changed over the course of the day, changed after that. I don't know if it was directly a function of that protest, but that certainly helped hammer home the point. Tonight, I'm excited though. No protest, just a great meal. Not all ingredients are created equal. And thankfully, for less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers easy-to-follow recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients, courtesy of over 150 local farms, ranches, and fisheries across the United States, right to your door. Less than $10 per person per meal. It is significantly cheaper than ordering in. And it's about 10 times more delicious. And you get to make it. And there's very little food waste, if any, because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required. You can make the meals in less than 40 minutes or less. Less than 40 minutes or less. You know that. This is what's coming in February. I'm very excited about these. Cashew chicken stir fry with tango, mandarins, and jasmine rice. Udon noodle soup with miso and soft-boiled eggs. Oh, God. Roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad. Less than $10 per meal. And crispy barramundi. That's a fish, I believe, with quinoa and roasted carrot salad. I never even said meals like this. Like, I never even articulated this type of quality of food before we got Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/majority. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/majority. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Also, folks, has there ever been a time more in your life where you need to laugh? Oh, my God. I feel like everyone I know is going insane. So you need to find some little place where you can just let it all go. Maybe it's for just 30 minutes. Well, I have something for you on that accord. CISO. You've heard me talk about it before. Do you like British comedies like the IT Crowd? Maybe you prefer classics like 30 Rock and Parks and Rec. Whatever makes you laugh, CISO has something in its library just for you. And there's new content added all the time. This month, you can watch UK imports like The Darkest Universe and Steve Coogan's Saxondale. Plus, you can access CISO anytime, anywhere, on iOS, Android, Apple TV, almost any other device. And you ready for the punchline, folks? Just gave you the premise. Now the punchline, $3.99 per month. Seriously. Look, the world is going to be laughing with or without you. So you might as well get on board. Go to CISO, that's SEESO.com right now to sign up for 1 month free with the promo code MAJORITY at checkout. This is the best offer CISO has got going right now. 1 month of laugh your ass off comedy free just by using the promo code MAJORITY. That's CISO.com. As in, I see you, so, see, so.
All right. Very creative.
Well, no, that I see you, actually, I'll tell you why. Because they have old episodes of Saturday Night Live, and I watched that short film with Martin Short and what's his face? From he's on Simpsons now. Harry Shearer. And they had a short film where they were synchronized swimmers. And I just remember this moment where, I see you, I see you.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Right, there you go. So thank you. Well, that's just how my brain works. That's CISO.com, promo code MAJORITY. CISO.com, promo code MAJORITY.
You see, Professor Tribe?
All right, look, I want to play this video just for a second. This is sort of funny and also sort of disturbing. God, I get nauseous every time I see Trump now. Man, they just like...
He looks grotesque, of course.
He is a grotesque figure. Grotesque on the inside, grotesque on the outside. Oh. But here's something that I can't tell if he is trying to express his anger with Rudy Giuliani because Giuliani gave up the ghost on the whole Muslim ban thing. Like, literally, and we'll talk to Professor Tribe about this. That could be cited in court. Or if Trump is like so, I don't know, just out of it that he's not even aware of his surroundings. This is yesterday when he was pretending to pay homage to Black History Month. And I guess this was today, right? This is yesterday. This is yesterday. I guess this was cybersecurity experts. Not Black History Month. So, watch this, okay? He's looking around for Rudy, and you'll never guess where he ends up being.
With that, I want to introduce Rudy Giuliani, and he's going to be working with Jared Kushner and with Tom Bossert, who are also here. And Rudy's very much of an expert on cybersecurity. It's been a very important thing to him and to what he does. And maybe I'll ask Rudy to say a few words.
Well, thank you very, very much, Mr. President. First of all, congratulations on what is, in fact, a historic start of an administration. I've never seen
there
so
he is,
much done
directly
in, so short
in front of him. Where's Rudy? Oh, he's sitting directly in front of me, 3 feet directly in front of my face. So he's either expressing his anger with Rudy, which was a... not a terribly effective way. I don't think I would be like, oh, he must be mad at me because he pretended like he didn't see me sitting right across from him.
Oh, he knows what it means.
Very strange. Very, very strange. You know, I've not been on MSNBC this week, but I still shaved. Why? Because I actually, I don't want to say I enjoy it, but it's not the nightmare that it used to be for me. And why? Because of Harry's. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of their customers. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own factory. By taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price. Just $2 a blade compared to four or more you pay at the drugstore. I can't tell if it's the... if I can actually tell the quality of the blade is better, or just like I know that it's cheaper and I feel better about it, but I get a great shave. They have a weighted ergonomic handle. I like the handles. The five precision engineered blades with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, so you can, you know, get into all those nooks and crannies that your nose may have. Mine. Rich lathering shave gel, travel blade cover. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. Yes, you heard me right. You just cover the shipping when you sign up. Plus, a special offer for fans of this show. Go to harrys.com right now. Enter the code MAJORITYREPORT at checkout and get a post-shave balm, also free. That's harrys.com, code MAJORITYREPORT. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Professor of Constitutional Law at Harvard University, Lawrence Tribe, will be joining us.
You can rely on me, honey. You can combine anything you want. I'll be around. You write about the stars. Each one.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure and an honor to welcome to the program the Carl M. Loeb University Professor and Professor of Law at Harvard University, Lawrence Tribe. Professor, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Sam.
So there's a number of things I want to talk to you about, which is in and of itself, I think, a little bit distressing in the sense that we have multiple opportunities, it seems to me, where constitutional issues are being raised almost on a daily basis by our president. But let's start with the emoluments. You joined a suit against the against the president based upon a his being in violation of the emoluments clause. In fact, there are two of them in the Constitution. Tell us what the foundations of that suit are.
Well, the gist of it is that the Foreign Emoluments Clause, you mentioned there too, the one that we focus on most is the Foreign Emoluments Clause, which from the very beginning of the Republic was designed to make sure that officials of our government, especially the highest officials like the president, have undivided loyalty to the United States, that they are not on the receiving end of benefits of various kinds from foreign governments and from foreign-owned institutions. The concern of the people who wrote the Constitution and ratified it, based on really European history with which they were very familiar, was that countries would basically try to worm their way into one another's priorities. For example, the King of France, Louis XIV, gave presents under the table to the King of England, Charles II, so that he was kind of a mole. And above all, the framers were worried that France or other countries would try to curry favor with the American president or with his family or with others so that we couldn't really have any way of being sure that when the president makes decisions about our policy vis-a-vis other countries, that he's really doing it in our benefit rather than to enrich himself. And because of the sort of enormous, really vast network of companies that are part of the Trump empire around the world, other countries, India, the Philippines, Turkey, one country after another, Scotland, have opportunities to do economically valuable favors for Trump, his businesses, his family, and it's happening all the time. We don't know, you know, all the details because he's kept his tax returns from us. We don't know all the banks from which he's borrowed, and many of them, of course, are banks controlled by foreign governments like China that are in a position to do him favors, to basically renegotiate loans, put him on better terms. And so all kinds of things that the president does day to day vis-a-vis all of these other countries are being done under the shadow of an ongoing constitutional violation. And so several people and I got together and filed a lawsuit on the first working day of the administration. I filed it against the president in his official capacity, asking a court to order him to basically liquidate his assets so that he's no longer in the position of being essentially on the take from one government after another. And then you mentioned the other clause. There is the domestic emoluments clause, which is designed to make sure that the president doesn't get sort of paid on the side by the Secret Service or some other part of the U.S. government or by state governments. That's also something that the president is violating constantly. And as this suit moves on, that might assume a more prominent place in the litigation.
What's stunning about the emoluments clause is that we have heard so little about it prior to, or at least I have, so little about it prior to Donald Trump actually winning the election, and that it seems to be so fundamental to one of the reasons why when our government was set up, we didn't have a king. Right?
Exactly right. I mean, we heard little about it over the years, although some of us, you know, make our living studying
right.
obscure little details have heard about it. But the country's heard very little about it because basically, with very limited exceptions, our presidents have just obeyed it. We haven't had a president who has taken the position that he can run a business empire and the United States of America both at the same time. It's kind of an amazing juggling act.
I want to put a pin in that because it's taken us to the place that we may get to with a number of other issues, it seems to be, which is what happens when a president does not follow the law. I want to sort of jump over to the immigration ban because we have another instance where this executive order, it's been stayed by four U.S. district judges, or I should say at least part of it has been. And right. There are other lawsuits that are ongoing that both question the executive order based on statutory grounds, but what seems to be more prominent is the constitutional grounds. Tell us what the argument is in terms of why this immigration ban violates our Constitution, and then we'll work our ways up to what is the recourse when the president
right.
does this?
Well, it violates the Constitution in some pretty fundamental ways. The First Amendment says that the federal government cannot establish a religion, and that clearly includes, both in terms of the original meaning of the document and what it's come to mean over the centuries, that includes any kind of line drawing by the government among people based on their religions. Whether you prefer some to others or disadvantage some, the government is supposed to keep its hands off of religion, not only in terms of not interfering with religious freedom, but in terms of not playing favorites and basically declaring that we're a Christian nation or giving us any other religious identity. Well, this law clearly violates that. It's basically targeted at seven identified countries that are all Muslim majority countries. And the government's response that there are 39 other Muslim majority countries that aren't covered really is not a response at all. I mean, if you go and kill 25 black people because of their race, it's not an answer to say that there are millions of black people I didn't kill.
Right.
So this is clearly religious discrimination, and it's touted as such. The president has said that the reason that minority religions that might be subject to persecution in these seven countries are excluded is precisely that he thinks that Christians have had a terrible time in these countries, and he wants to give them a preference. So it's clearly a violation of the religion clauses of our Constitution. it's also so draconian and unaccompanied by fair hearings or anything else of that kind that it violates the due process clause of the Constitution. And it also, in as much as it violates what Congress said in 1965, that you can't pick and choose among immigrants based on nation of origin or religion, it's a kind of violation of the separation of powers. So it's kind of a cornucopia of constitutional violations, including some statutory violations, which transmute this into a usurpation of Congress's prerogatives. It's sort of a test case, an example of something that manages to violate so much in the Constitution all at once. In fact, it may also violate the Emoluments Clause, because as some people have pointed out, one thing that's true about the seven countries that are named here is that none of them are countries in which Donald Trump and his enterprises do business. The countries of Iraq, Syria, Sudan, Iran, Somalia, Libya, and I guess Yemen are really pretty much too poor to be of great value to Trump, whereas the countries that attacked us on 9/11 or sent people to attack us, those are countries like Egypt and the UAE in which Trump has a lot of business interests.
And we should note that the UAE foreign minister defended the Trump ban. But let me ask you, just in terms of standing, it seems to me that when on the issue of violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, it seems like that is a restriction that is placed on our government, right? And so violating that, the standing issue, it seems to me, would be easier than the due process situation, which is a right that is reserved for American citizens. Do I have that? Is that analysis correct? And how do you?
It's not quite correct. The interesting thing about the due process clause of the Constitution, there are two of them, one in the Fifth Amendment that limits the federal government, and one in the 14th Amendment that limits the states and cities. It's couched in terms of persons. It says that the government cannot deprive any person. And the Supreme Court has said that includes non-citizens. It even includes, in some instances, non-permanent residents. Can't deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, there are limits on the extraterritorial reach of our Constitution. I mean, things that happen entirely abroad are thought by some people not to be subject to some constitutional provisions. But that's a complicated question in itself, because even though some of the people hurt by this order are outside the country, the order involved action taken very much inside the country, indeed inside the Beltway. And a lot of the people affected are people who had green cards, who had already received visas, who had left the country and are trying to return. And you are right to this important extent. The Establishment Clause is concerned with the adverse impact on everybody of having the government take sides religiously, so that Muslims in the United States, including American citizens who are Muslims, are being told in a way that they are second-class citizens. They're not full members of the community when they're told that their friends, their neighbors, their loved ones from abroad are under a cloud of suspicion. They can't come in as refugees. They are prevented from, for a certain number of days, from coming in as immigrants. And so a lot of the constitutional principles that are being violated here are principles that have application both to people here, including and especially citizens, but also to people outside the country.
Would family members have standing too? I mean, there's a horrible story today of an American, I believe he's a citizen, whose mother was in Iraq, and he was she fell ill while visiting here. And he was trying to bring her, visiting there, I should say. He tried to bring her back. She was not allowed. She ended up passing away.
Right.
Would a family member have standing in that instance?
I believe a family member would. The relationship that you have to your mom, your dad, your brother and sister, your kids, your lover, those are relationships that involve protected facets of liberty, protected under the Constitution. And when your liberty is infringed by having the government do something terrible to someone who's very much part of your family network, then you are injured in a particular way. You're not just a sort of a bystanding citizen with some ideological complaint.
And this takes us up to, you know, one of the moments that we saw was these stays being issued and at the very least some slow walking of response by some customs officials to these federal judges' orders. I mean, broadly speaking, at what point do we reach a constitutional crisis? I mean, let's say a court does find in favor of the suit that you're part of under the Emoluments Clause. Let's say federal courts do find that this ban is in violation of the Constitution. Them and what army? I mean, what happens then?
Well, army is the right image because remember that General then President Dwight David Eisenhower sent in the airborne to enforce a federal district court order desegregating the schools in Little Rock. When you don't have an administration that can be counted on to deploy military force to enforce the orders of courts, and you can be sure that Trump is not going to enforce the orders of these district courts, then you have a much more difficult problem. Courts don't have armies of their own. They don't have self-executing means of enforcement. They have to rely on the executive branch. And then when the executive branch is itself the violator, there's really only one remedy, and that is impeachment and removal from office. And that is what many people think this might eventually come to. And some people think eventually might be sooner than others believe, because everything is moving at just absolute lightning speed. I mean, we've, you know, as you said at the beginning of this conversation, I mean, the number of violations that this president manages to pile up in just the first week of his presidency is staggering.
And impeachment is inherently a political process, and
right.
So to a large extent, it's going to be, we can almost say at this point that the president is serving at the leisure of Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan.
That's right. One starts with the assumption that he's their guy, even though they didn't like him at first, and that they're going to ride his coattails as long as they're flying in the wind. But when they begin dragging, and when more and more people begin thinking, you know, we didn't exactly bargain for this. We didn't bargain for things that just don't feel like America. Then the fact is they might be happier with a President Mike Pence than with the current guy.
I think that seems like what everyone is anticipating. It's just a question of what that line is. But let's turn just briefly to the nomination of Neil Gorsuch, who I would imagine probably you taught.
No, as it happens, Barack Obama and Neil Gorsuch were in the same graduating class, but Barack Obama was in my constitutional law class. Neil Gorsuch was in another. I don't actually know who taught him constitutional law, but he certainly learned it well. He's a very smart guy, very, very learned judge. Writes well, very thoughtful, on all the, you know, he checks off all the normal criteria for being a totally excellent appointment, just viewed in isolation.
All right, but let's broaden that view out, because there are some who argue, and in fact, Gorsuch, when he wrote in 2005 in a piece for, I think it was the National Review, that the politicization of this process is undercutting the institution of the Supreme Court. It seems to me that Neil Gorsuch is the child of perhaps the most politicized move that we've ever seen in the context of the Supreme Court, which was the complete denial of hearings for a president for a year. Putting aside his own sort of individual merits, is he going to have an asterisk next to his name regardless of what happens going forward?
Well, in a way, every justice is going to have an asterisk next to his or her name in the future. I mean, it's hard to imagine a point in the future where the political warfare over every Supreme Court seat is going to be sort of less prominent than it is now. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see an 8-member court lasting for quite a while and the court getting smaller by attrition, because what the Republicans did to Merrick Garland was so extraordinary that it's very hard to imagine how we dig our way out of that hole. That is viewed purely in isolation. Neil Gorsuch is a terrific appointment, even though ideologically he's at a different point than the justices that I tend to agree with or favor. But you can't view it in isolation. There's no way to think about this seat, at least for someone like me, as anything other than a seat that was stolen from Merrick Garland in the first instance, and ultimately from Barack Obama, because he was treated as though he was just not a legitimate president in his final year. And when you've got a stolen seat, as you say, whoever fills it will have a kind of asterisk. And the whole question of how the Democrats should proceed now is just extremely difficult. I mean, one perspective is two wrongs don't make a right. They shouldn't be as obstructive as the Republicans were. But the other perspective is, if they don't grow a spine on this, when will they? The idea that perhaps they should give Neil Gorsuch a pass and not require that there be 60 votes and that they can put up a fight next time if they keep their powder dry, you know, when, let's say, someone more close to the center of the court, like Kennedy, leaves, it assumes there'll be any powder left at that point.
Right.
So it's a very tough issue.
I know we just have just a couple minutes left, literally, but can I just ask you about one of my hobby horses over the past 15, 16 years, Bush v. Gore? Do you think that was the original sin? I mean, that has like sort of in many ways led us to this point, both sort of from a political perspective and also sort of a legal slash political perspective.
Well, I have to say, first of all, I'm not exactly objective. Remember, there were two Supreme Court arguments in Bush v. Gore. I represented Gore in the first of the two. That got punted down to the Supreme Court of Florida. Then David Boies represented Gore in the second. So I have a hard time being entirely dispassionate about it. But just setting aside the way someone like me might feel about the about how the court entered the political fray sort of full speed ahead, I do think you're right that it made a real difference in how things looked ever since. I mean, it's a kind of watershed in our history. It's not as though the court's prestige and popularity immediately plummeted after Bush v. Gore. In fact, it survived in the sense that people still have a kind of august feeling about that institution, feel better about it than any other major public institution except the military. And yet there is a shadow that was cast by the apparently partisan nature of the 5-4 division in that case, so that in more and more cases, whether it's Citizens United or the reaffirmance by an increasingly narrow majority of the abortion right or the 5-4 decision upholding same-sex marriage, people look more than they did 50 years ago, let's say, at the political party of who appointed the president, which president appointed the justices on one side or another. And when the court is seen by too many people as just a bunch of partisan hacks in robes, even if that's a mischaracterization, and I believe it is, I think these people try in the overwhelming majority of instances to be decent lawyers and call it as they see it, even if they're not happy with the outcome. When so many people begin to think of them as just politicians playing an arcane game, then the ability of the independent judiciary to stand up against constitutional infringements is undermined because its political capital is spent. And that's a dangerous thing for a country like ours.
Professor Lawrence Tribe, thank you so much for joining us today. I can't tell you, what a pleasure and an honor it was for me to talk to you.
Pleasure and honor to talk to you. I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.
All right, folks. There you have it. We will we'll play the breakdown of Neil Gorsuch tomorrow with Ian Millhiser. You know, like I say, in many respects, the value of knowing what Gorsuch's record is to get a sense of really how this country is going to change over the next 2 or 3 decades. There's every reason to believe that Neil Gorsuch will be a Supreme Court justice for the next 30 years, maybe more. And he is extremely conservative. He is, by all accounts, very intelligent. Ian Millhiser described, and you will hear this tomorrow, that he is rather stealthy in attacking institutions or policies that he does not comport with. Just to give you a taste of his perspective, at least when he was a younger man, back, I think this is from his college yearbook? Columbia. Yeah, at Columbia, as an undergraduate. He was the founder of the Federalist Paper at Columbia. He was a member of Phi Gamma Delta. I know nothing about that, to be honest with you. And then his quote, his college quote, "The illegal we do immediately. The unconstitutional takes a little longer," by Henry Kissinger. You should also know that...
big league fucking quote, by the way.
If you were one of those people who felt strongly about getting money out of politics, that route is going to be foreclosed and probably move in the opposite direction until you are collecting Social Security or have passed away.
Not collecting
or have
Security.
Stopped taking, collecting Social Security and just join one of the millions of people who illegally vote after they're dead. There are other issues with the Neil Gorsuch, but the primary force seems to be that this is a corporatist's dream pick.
Stop trying to emotionally extort people at the Supreme Court.
You mean just like Merrick Garland?
So
no, I mean
right,
I had those exchanges during
the
campaign.
He's just like Merrick Garland. all right, look, I don't want to get too, I mean, there's a lot of anger. I mean, I've gotten multiple emails today, and we're going to go through, look, here, this is just the reality. We're going to go through a series of these. Not just when it comes to Supreme Court justices, but with each new policy, we're going to go through this, and we can't escape it. So let's try and, you know, sort of have a little fun with it.
You're going to be so tired of losing.
You may even get tired of watching the modern fabric of society completely torn apart. But I do hear on the positive note for some of you people that many celebrities are getting texts that they had not been getting before.
So, look, the good news is, and... you know, you got to look for these things. You know, they say every cloud has a silver lining.
Obviously, I know.
That lining can be really, really thin. But you should talk about it. You should not forget that it's not as big as a cloud. But
Stein 2020?
I think that it looks like there has been enough pressure exerted. And it really is the reason. Like, you know, people were like, why are you... I was tweeting out a little bit from the Chuck Schumer protest. And it was geared towards not so much protesting Chuck Schumer as much as bucking Chuck Schumer up and saying, do not vote to confirm any of these people.
Letting him know where the momentum is.
Exactly. And that's why this stuff needs to be kept up. And the more people who show up, you know, like I said, you go out for an hour and it was fun. Saul was a little, you know, cold and a little, I tried to shoot a video, but it was too dark. But at one point he's like, why are we going this way? Like he's now smart enough. I had him in the stroller and he's now smart enough to realize like, wait a second, we're not heading home. You can't. It's like one of those cab drivers.
Where's
like,
Blue Apron?
It used to be like in New York. Like if you pick up a cab driver, like before, like everybody had a map on their phone, you get picked up by a cab driver like 1985. And you say, you know, take me, you know, you're coming in from JFK or from LaGuardia, take me in. And like they would just drive you everywhere. And
now you're deported.
I tried to do that with Saul. And is the point?
As a savvy
and
kid,
he was just like, "Wait a second, we're not going. Why are we going this way?"
I don't see a string cheese scenario and blankie here.
Right, exactly. Like almost literally what he said. He doesn't use the word scenario.
Oh, yeah, he's precocious.
He says sitch.
The sitch.
No, I didn't say that.
Like, look, Dad, we all hate Chuck Schumer.
But the point
he's a sniveling little prick, but I want Blanky.
The point is, let me get this piece here. Yesterday afternoon, Jeff Merkley came out, and on Monday, I should say. This is from Politico. On Monday, Senator Jeff Merkley announced his plans to mount a filibuster against any Trump nominee, vowing to use the Senate's tools to exact revenge for Garland's treatment. Later in the day, Schumer buttonholed Merkley to chide him on his comments, according to multiple sources familiar with the matter. While Schumer told Merkley that he had the right to demand a 60-vote threshold on the nominee, he also told him not to make the fight about retribution for Garland, those sources said. Schumer told Merkley, who's now the caucus's chief deputy whip, to speak for himself and not the party. After the protest last night. And of course, there's a lot of other things going on, but these all, you can't disaggregate this stuff any more than you can say, like, is it important for one person to show up at that protest? Of course it is, because the more people you get there protesting, the better. Schumer came out and said they're going to need 60 votes. And the value of this is not necessarily tangible. It's political. It is to really help in 2018 and to make it clear and make the Republicans own not only Neil Gorsuch and the Supreme Court. Hopefully it also gets the left to understand the importance of the Supreme Court, but I'm afraid that ship has basically sailed, at least for generations. And it also is important insofar as the more you can make Mitch McConnell own stuff, the better.
And
that if there's no excuse for Mitch McConnell to give to, his base, that there is a filibuster, then they're going to own what the base is demanding they do. And it's going to put pressure on them. Which, you know, that's really the only course of action we have at this point.
It may also speed up an impeachment scenario, possibly, which I thought would only definitely happen after the midterms.
I don't think it certainly is not going to happen before the midterms, short of like Donald Trump running around naked on
which I am not
the front lawn of the White House.
Where's Rudy?
Well, needs to be in the front line. Where's Rudy?
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to head into the fun half. 646-257-3920. Folks, it's your membership that makes this show possible. If you have the financial means, go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Again, if you don't have the means to pay for a membership, send us an email at Majority Reporters. We will work a deal out with you. We don't turn anyone away. What else? JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code Majority. Get 10% off. All that other stuff. Majority Report, kickback.com if you buy crap from Amazon or Jet. I'm hearing, well, I'm not going to say anything. And we'll be right back. 646-257-3920.